Welcome back to Almost Famous Minute, where we're discussing the 2000 Cameron Crowe film Almost Famous, 1 minute at a time. I'm Eric Nash from Watchmen Minute.
And we're Shanti and Lynx from Muses.
Hello.
Hey, glad to have you both back after this past week, where we talked about some great things, some fun things there going on in the hotel room, but we're going to get a little more serious, I think, coming up this minute and next. Oh, and even actually the final one. The final one might in a sense be the most serious.
Well, it's a good thing you have us here for that.
Yeah, because you two aren't jokesters of any sort, are you?
Besides Pamela DeBar herself, we feel like we are the authority on the groupie lifestyle. It's who we are.
Yeah. So thank you so much for returning. And this is minute 91. And it starts with William helping Penny get up and ends with Penny asking about love.
Oh, it starts with my favorite and most quoted, personally most quoted line of the movie. Especially if I was, say, at a party and it was time for me to go home and somebody's like, oh, why are you leaving so early? And it's because I'm tired. You know that I'm tired. I'm retired. I'm tired.
I have heard the actual drunken Shanti quote before, and she's always dead on with it.
Yeah, I mean, give me a couple more beers, and you know that I'm tired. And I'm retired.
Tired. I do like that she's drinking champagne with it. With her quaaludes, right? She's classy about it.
Keeping
it
classy.
You saying I'm not classy?
Oh, no.
Well, no, nothing was mentioned about you, Shanti, doing ludes or quaaludes. When you're doing that little imitation as well.
Shanti's go-to drink is a Bud Light, so I'm just going to throw that out there.
It's hard to imagine with the quaaludes that you'd be able to get to still do the imitation impersonation.
Very true.
Yeah. So she's tired. She's retired, and I just love that play on words. I love that it's something that she says that she is, but she's not, and then she is, and yeah.
Yeah. How many times has she had that conversation before? How many times has she said, "I am retired"?
Mm-hmm.
But you're never retired, right, Shanti?
Never, never. You always have a groupie heart, and it doesn't matter. You know, you can go to a show in your 80s, and if you see your, you know, as Pamela DeBar calls it, your fave rave, you're always going to be transported back to that, you know, 16-year-old girl who's head over heels. And yeah, it's interesting to be, you know, tired or retired, because if we go back to, you know, the groupies of the 60s and 70s, there became a time where there was a new wave of groupies that came in, and all of a sudden the 20-year-old groupies were the old groupies, and you have to kind of go back into some deeper, I guess, groupie history, but to know about the little bit of the, I don't want to say feud, because all of the girls are friends now, but
when you're that young and
just
getting out into the world, you don't know yet that woman power comes from being all together, right?
So you know, William is responding with, you got to get up, Penny, get up, you know, and he's lifting her up at this point. And, you know, it's very awkward, you know, he's trying to be, you know, not too touchy-feely and so forth. It's just, get her out, and you know, he even has a couple points, you know, his hands are definitely, they're under her armpits, but, you know, his arms and his, but his hands are trying to stay away from being too touchy.
Yep.
But that's going to change next minute into a whole other weirdness. Yeah, and then we even have this over what her saying, the what, you know, the retired, tired, what have you, with the song coming in, originally by Chicago, and I think this is a, you know, the guy's voice is, when he ends up singing, this seems pretty spot on, but
it is,
the band Chicago, their song Color My World, I've loved it since I was like 13 or 14, and I was discovering my dad's record collection, you know, and that was definitely a standout, you know. It was, you know, not I mean, while they had these other great rockin' songs like 25 or 6 to 4, it's, you know, this one really stood out as, you know, a simpler, you know, mostly piano.
And that flute solo.
Yeah, right. Gotta love a flute solo in a rock song.
Yeah, and it's only one verse, which also makes it really interesting,
right?
As a song.
I mean, but they are very much a horn band, so it certainly makes plenty of sense that they'd have some other kind of non-percussive string.
It's interesting choice of song for that moment because it's actually playing at the graduation that he's supposed to be at. But I feel like the lyrics and, of course, the mood of the song is reflecting him and Penny much more than a graduation. One interesting thing that I have experienced is working graduations. I work at a music venue, and every year we have, for a whole week, we do 2 graduations a day.
Wow. Whoa.
It's hell on earth, really.
Yeah.
But I always find this scene funny because it reminds me of working these graduations. And one thing I can tell you is that the bands that they choose to play these grads are actually playing the weirdest songs that you would never think. I have heard this one band at this grad play Afternoon Delight. I'm not even kidding. Adele's Hello. Yeah. Rehab by Amy Winehouse. Tiny Dancer Always, bringing it back to Almost Famous. But they just, and the audience always looks really kind of stunned and like not really knowing what to do. But the band is so into it. It's like they're playing the biggest music venue. And this scene always makes me chuckle because it's so not fitting, but also so fitting to apparently reality.
Yeah. Wow. And we do first hear between the two of them, there's this Mrs. Deegan, and then there's the principal. You know, she's saying one of the other graduates' names, Jane Abbott. But so she's in the same character, and this also actor, is in the longest deleted scene, the one that's not even on the untitled actual run of the film, but it is in a extra deleted scene, the stairway scene. Which is certainly available on YouTube with the music, because that's a big thing is on the Blu-ray, at least that I have, with the extra of the stairway scene. It says, hey, you know, start playing the song here, you know, because they couldn't get the rights for that either, of course. So Mrs. Deegan is played by Cameron's mother.
I love that.
So cool.
Alice.
Oh, I did not know that. I love that she made in there.
Yeah, because I definitely knew it was her in the deleted scene. but then when it came time to this, because I just watched it a day or two before. I just happened to be watching it that deleted scene, and then I was watching this minute preparing. Wait a second.
I didn't know that.
That's the same character, thus they're also the same actress, but really not even an actress, you know.
So she was in 2 scenes, is what you're saying.
Yeah, essentially it boils down to, but for the theatrical cut, of course, just the.
Okay, yeah. I was an extra in a TV show once.
Cool.
It was a recent TV show called Mrs. America. I don't know if you've heard of it. It's on FX. But when I was an extra, they had me in 2 different scenes.
Yeah.
And in one scene, I was in 2 different places.
Yeah.
So if I look back at the one scene, I'm both on the dance floor and sitting at the bar in the same scene. And I can spot myself because I'm looking for myself. But when they had made that, like, okay, now everybody on the dance floor, come over here to the bar, I was like, but I'm definitely going to make myself seen. So they're going to be seeing me in both. I'm like, oh, but that's kind of a shitty thing to do, you know? Like,
well, speaking of extras, I know that Cameron Crowe has talked about this scene before and how annoyed he is with it because of the extra behind Frances McDormand.
Right. Yep. Here's that.
I love the one that yells, "Yeah, Raymond!"
No, no, there's a woman behind her that, as I think Cameron Crowe puts it, yeah, is trying to out-act Frances.
Oh!
And, like, yeah, you can tell this, like, she's just an extra, but she's, like, committed to that part. Yeah. Let's just put it that way. She definitely stands out a lot.
I think part of it might be, I mean, some people, you know, just smile a fair amount in general, but she is just smiling nearly the whole time, all the way throughout, you know?
Yeah. And, but, like, nodding her head and, like, yeah, clapping, yeah, for everyone.
That little,
like,
nod to the head I just caught there, right when you're saying it.
Yeah. She's something.
It's hard
else.
Being an extra, you know?
You can't compare to Frances McDormand. If she's in the scene, you just gotta sit there and quietly clap, you know?
Yeah.
Not a little less.
It's true. Speaking of Frances, Eric, have you ever seen the 2002 movie Laurel Canyon?
Yes. Yeah.
So what a shift in characters from from this, you know, the, and I mean, she's a mother in Laurel Canyon too, but then you put her in Laurel Canyon,
yeah,
movie about music, and she does a total turnaround. She's the music producer, she's smoking weed, she's the one embarrassing her
kid.
Her kid is embarrassed of her for a fully different reason.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a good point. Yeah, I'd forgotten about that movie for a little while. That's while I've been doing this show. But yeah.
Yeah, she's like ripping bongs in that movie. Yeah. There's pictures of her up on the walls of, you know, her and Joni Mitchell and Red Hot Chili Peppers or something. And yeah, Christian Bale and Kate Beckinsale are in it. And they're just like, oh, my mom is so embarrassing.
I also read that for this scene, another cameo is Crow's high school journalism teacher, who he threw in some point. I'm not sure which person he is in that scene, but I thought it was pretty cool that he brought in his journalism teacher. I never really had a teacher that affected me enough that I would ever keep in contact with them, but I really like hearing about people like that. And Shanti actually used to be a teacher, and I know she was one of those teachers. I thought that was cool.
Got that right.
So I was mentioning the other character here, the principal. So we don't actually have a name for him. And that actually coincides very well with two others out of the four. I don't know if you know the top four for IMDb, what people are known for. So no. Almost Famous, that is the number one, in the number one spot, at least, going from left to right. The second movie is No Way Out. Wonderful movie. Kevin Costner, back in 87. He's just known as Technician there. And then the third one is Splash, which hopefully later this summer you should hear me talk about normally Movie by Minute podcast host person, but he's doing T. Hanks for the Memories. So give a little shout out for that, going through all of Tom Hanks' movie catalog, essentially.
That's a great one. Awesome. I wanted to be a mermaid growing up, so loved that film.
And that is the one episode out of a few, or several even, that I signed up for that we have recorded.
Great.
For
cool.
Splash.
We'll look forward to that.
So for Splash, he's just Mikkelsen's partner. So someone else's name. Another character's name, whoever that is. I don't even remember. I don't even know if that could be the Eugene Levy character. Maybe. Or maybe it's the people above him. Yeah. Oh, well. Other than that, I mean, gosh, yeah, he's been in plenty of TV stuff. That's for sure. Yeah. And I don't have too much. I mean, yeah, going way back to those 80s. But
I was curious while watching this scene if Cameron Crowe actually did miss his graduation. Yeah. And I found out that he didn't. Mm-hmm. What happened was that he actually graduated from his high school, which was the University of San Diego High School.
Yeah, right.
At 15 in 1972. And in the movie, William Miller's graduation is 73, I believe. Mm-hmm. And he only met Ben Fong Torres after that on a trip to Los Angeles. when he was 16. And when he was 16, that's when he went on the road with the Allman Brothers for 3 weeks. So he just kind of melded these two things together for the film for dramatic effect. But in case anyone's curious, Kremen's actual high school graduation.
And some might say that William Miller does have a graduation of sorts in this scene, too. Right. Like he's not getting, you know, a cap and gown and like a now like here's your diploma, you're moving on. But he's certainly like learned his lessons from the road at this point. He's seen who all of the characters really are. He's seen the bands and the band and how they treated Penny. And he's now in his own like graduation from this assignment, too.
Good point. Cameron Crowe's just a genius.
So one thing I did wonder about when, you know, Frances McDormand's character was sitting there and seemed like surprised that William didn't show up. Did she not know that he wasn't going to make it, or he kept telling her he'd make it, or she just kind of held out hope, or deep down she knew?
He'd make a grand entrance.
Yeah, seriously. Maybe that's what she was hoping for. But that didn't happen.
She just wanted to live the moment, and unfortunately, William was off living a more exciting moment.
But you know, so I mean, if he were to have shown up, you know, crazily at the very last second or minute or second, what have you, that I mean, would he have been wearing what we see him wearing roughly in the scene? I mean, you know, he wouldn't have, you know,
been in his
probably wouldn't have had time to change into the traditional cap and gown. And then like I was mentioning with the song, I mean, the lyrics do start here after a little while of it, you know, being, you know, the intro part, you know, as time goes on, and right in there, I'm pretty sure that if I did time it out right, in my little notes, you know, the very next thing we hear after that first line is William, you know, getting Penny to do her back when not the first times that we saw her, but when she made a grand entrance of her own, you know, William says seats and tray tables, and that gets her to go
seat back and tray tables locked. Yeah, because she knows that by heart. That's her shtick.
It's like he knows. He's smart enough to keep her talking, something that she can recite, something easy to her, something comforting to her.
Yeah. And then after that, she asks the question, why doesn't he love me?
Yeah. And he is Russell.
Yeah. Yeah.
to be clear, I mean, I'm pretty sure, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It is this kind of crazy, weird three-way, because, you know, Penny, William has, you know, while he's certainly had this affection for Penny, he's actually also has this hopefully a career, you know, what we certainly know from Cameron, it became a career. wasn't just a little dalliance or anything, but, you know, he's, you know, as far as a triangle goes, you know, usually it's just... you know, it doesn't quite happen in the non-sexual way. Mm-hmm. You know, it's this very professional way that William is also kind of going after Russell throughout so much of the movie.
Yeah,
and trying to.
And William doesn't answer this question.
Yeah,
she asks him that, and maybe it was rhetorical. And I like that there's just a pause, and then our minute ends. But one thing that, you know, I'm sure has been mentioned a lot is, you know, the inspiration for the Penny Lane character and how she's kind of a combination of, you know, the Penny and B.B. Buell and Pamela DeBar, right?
Yeah, yeah. The Penny Trumbull is last name.
Yep.
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 Yeah. Yeah, those three. And I mean, and then there's definitely, Christian was on, and he was extremely a huge proponent that at least from Kate Hudson's point of view, she was very much going after Pamela, Miss Pamela.
Yeah, exactly.
With
so
her book especially.
Yeah, and Kate herself had told Pamela, because Pamela was invited to the premiere, that she had, that she read her book, I'm with a Vand, Confessions of a Groupie, ahead of time. And then she had pictures of Pamela up in her dressing room. And actually, Lynx and I met at Pamela's writing workshop in Toronto. So it was Pamela who brought us together, because, and it was, we brought Pamela to Pantheon because we were like, she needs a podcast. So she has to get her stories out there. And we're so glad that she is doing that, because she's the original. She really is. She taught us everything we know. And we asked her blessing to before we started our podcast. Hey, do you mind if we start a podcast about groupies and muses? And we asked them to tell their stories on this new platform. And she was like, yeah, of course you can. So when asked about this scene in particular, you know, Pamela likes the movie fine. Almost Famous made it harder for her to sell her own story, because they're always like, it's been done. And Pamela kind of called Cameron on that and said, I should have been consulted on this. And he kind of apologized, because the first time Cameron met Pamela, I think she was hanging out with Led Zeppelin. So Pamela does have a problem with this scene, because she thinks and she believes that no actual music loving goddess groupie would do such a thing. And a person interviewed her for a Vulture article, and the author said, so much for being a quote unquote band-aid for the quote unquote music. Rather, when rejected by a shitty man, the movie's heroine nearly ends her life because she doesn't see a path forward without his love. And then Pamela called it a horribly misogynistic look at what a groupie muse is. And she said, that made me angry. None of them would have done that, basically. There was always someone else coming to town that really turned me off. Yeah. And of the actual, I mean, going back to, you know, one of the minutes a long time ago when they say we're not groupies, we're band-aids, about that line, Pamela yelled, what a pussy line. And then she says, and pussy in a bad way. Yeah. I hate that the word is used in a negative way. But anyway, Penny Lane was not owning herself, not owning groupiedom and what it actually means. But we've actually also taken issue with Cameron Crowe's depictions of groupies in his show Roadies.
Okay.
So while he did a lot for the groupie, of course, with this movie, he also did not present them in the best lights, both in this movie and, of course, in that show Roadies. Right, Lynx?
In Roadies, it wasn't just the groupies, like definitely the groupies, but it was just also every woman in that. I don't think he represented, surprising to me, but yeah, it would have been interesting to have Pamela and even like BB and other people consult maybe a little bit more on the female character.
Now with that show, it did just do one season. Yeah, it was canceled essentially. I mean, it wasn't his decision, was it? Cameron's Crow. To just have it end after one, because I only think I ever watched the first episode, and I really should go back and watch.
Yeah, I think it was canceled.
But I guess my question would be, I wonder if, and I mean, it'd be too bad if he just hadn't done it this way to start with. If just in case I only get this one season, to at least kind of have some kind of like maybe like a character arc essentially, or more or multiple characters, whatever. Arcs to them that would make the women in it and make the groupies in it too.
Yeah. That's actually interesting too, because it makes me think about Scorsese's TV show. It was called Vinyl, I think.
Yeah, right.
And I had the same issue with that, where like the women just weren't portrayed well, and it was interesting enough where I was like, maybe I'll watch a second season, but like I was really hoping that the second season create these female characters like with more personality and backstory and everything, because none of these guys have really done it right, and that's why we need someone like Pamela to write her script present a true female side of the story, because of course, like always, it's been men all this sort of telling the story for us. So Hopefully yeah, that, Pamela's able to do that sometime.
That actually brings up something I wanted to I tried to. I think I did an okay job, but still not as much as I would have liked. But to have more women, you know, to be my guests and co-hosts sometimes too, you know, in a sense. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, it's something I kind of wondered about, you know, and tried to do a decent job with.
It's good to be thinking about it now, yeah. You know, other yeah. people don't at all or, you know, are yeah, just beginning right. to, and that's a positive thing. We're mindful of that.
Yeah, and we like to collaborate with other women, especially doing music podcasts themselves.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's both the reason why we started the podcast is because we love the other side of the story. A lot of these women kept journals, really detailed, vivid journals as it happened, and then they made them into memoirs. And a lot of them got villainized for it, you know, because of sex shaming, slut shaming, you know, misogyny, all that kind of stuff. But I think now there's like a resurgence too in really appreciating these stories for what they are and seeing how it was all a part of like a sexual revolution mm-hmm. and how they were really feminists and, you know, created a path for many women. So we love being a part of getting those stories to more ears.
The probably one of the last things I would want to point out is actually the continuation of the lyrics. You know, it was for the song "Color My World." So I, you know, that came in between all these other lines. You know, of the dialogue. I realize just what you mean to me, and now that you're near. So I mean, I guess my biggest reason to bring that up is just, you know, I mean, especially that the now you're near, now that you're yeah. near is, I mean, it's. You know, because, I mean, they are in this extremely close contact with each other. You know, again, it's great, you know, usage of lyrics, but also it's such a wonderful song, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really beautiful.
And nice little slow dance that they have. Go.
And I like that he just delicately takes his fingers and presses them on her forehead.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Amazing callback to.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Second time yeah. they met.
100%.
Any other notes on this minute?
Yeah, me too. If you're okay with it.
Yeah.
Okay.
So links, as I mentioned last week, links, if you could rank the bands.
All right.
Do you need a little refresher?
No, I'm good. No? I'm yeah. good.
Cool.
I'm definitely, I'm sorry it's so obvious, but Zeppelin obviously is first for me. I was worried that me and Shanti would pair up perfectly, but we didn't on this one. I would say Zeppelin first for obvious reason. Then I really love Lynyrd Skynyrd. I wouldn't say I play them often, but I've definitely put them on more than the other three bands. I have like great memories, some great like personal memories with songs from their catalog. So I'm going to go Skynyrd, then Allman Brothers. And then the Eagles. I'm sorry, I'm not a fan of the Eagles at all. So they're like a low four for me. But yeah. I really liked all the other three.
And are you a big fan of Big Lebowski?
I do love the Big Lebowski. Yeah.
Okay. I was planning on having a Seeger summer. Because I haven't listened to, you know, a whole lot of Bob Seeger. But maybe I should have a Seeger Skynyrd summer.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That'd be nice.
All right. Cool. That's what I'll do.
So, yeah, thanks so much for giving us that little thing. So then we'll ask Shanti about your experience with the movie, your history, when you if you did see it in the theater and how many times possibly you've seen it over many years now, probably.
Yeah, right on. So it came out in 2000. Yep. So I was 12. I remember my mom and my older brother rented it and they watched it. And I remember being present, but not quite into it. Wow. Didn't hit me for another couple of years. I was a little bit older. I wasn't quite mature enough. And even if I watched it, it didn't hit me in the same way as it did a couple of years later. And then I loved it. I really loved it. And then when I got to university, I realized that, you know, I was hanging out with bands all the time. I would be one of the first on the dance floor. I'd get everybody going. And then Pamela DeBar's book came to me. I'm with the band. And then everything kind of all made sense. And I realized, like, who I am and what I'm doing here and what my role in the music scene was, and finally accepting it. Cause I had a hard time accepting, like, well, I'm not a musician, so what do I bring to this? And then for a little while there, was it, maybe it was, yeah, in high school, I rewatched it quite a few times, and then in university, and I really loved it. And then I was even more excited to become friends with yeah. who I felt was a real big inspiration for the movie, because, as you know, a groupie does, it's, you know, we just kind of want to be a part of it. Like, we want to get in. It's not enough to almost be on the outside just watching. You have to be close enough that you can touch it. So to be able to have gotten close enough that I can touch it made it all the more better.
That's wonderful. Yeah. Yeah, every now and then I've had some guests, but I knew you were guests that would have seen it quite a bit. But every now and then, I was saying every now and then I've had a guest that, like, essentially hasn't seen any of it besides the minutes, you know. But maybe wow. just a couple times. I think that might have happened once or twice.
No, but, I think it's safe to say like we have it pretty memorized.
I was gonna say, if you want, we can recite it all for you. Just ask.
Well, you know, the way the Movies by Minutes kind of started is with Star Wars Minute. And there is a guy out there, you know, not related to Movies by Minutes, but related to Star Wars, who apparently does recite at least, like, I think the original trilogy, you know, word for word, all the way through it. He can't do that. Yeah, I mean, that's if that's like a going concern, you know, a thing that I think he does it for money. He does it on the stage, you know. So maybe at some point a few years down the road, Almost Famous might be there. Maybe for its 25th.
I do want to see the musical. They made a musical of this, right?
Well, yeah. So yeah, and I even had the lead actor playing William on.
Oh, damn, that's so cool.
Yeah. So hopefully, and it sounds like they are going to shoot for Broadway when it comes back. Because at first it was just the one fall of, 2019?
Yeah.
There in San Diego at the Globe.
Apparently. Well, I love a reason to go to New York.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, I really hope, yeah, and probably a good year or two away-ish, I would bet, but, you know, yeah, and unfortunately, I mean, gosh, I'd have to imagine maybe they'd have switched at least for him. Unfortunately, he would probably possibly be the one character, maybe, that character actor that probably would change.
Too old, yeah.
Yeah, getting too old, but he learned the character so well, but maybe he'll be lucky enough to have retained his youthful appearance and stuff.
Or maybe like a different role. Maybe he's one of the members of Stillwater.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that could. So yeah, so hopefully that all works out. We definitely want to hear from you know, again, kind of either or both of you. A little more quickly, especially like, say, socials. What make sure we understand, you know, get your socials.
All right. Yeah. Well, you can find us pretty much on any platform that you listen to your podcasts, and you just look up Muses and there will be. You can go to musespod.com. That's our website. We have some blog posts. We were talking earlier about women in podcasting. We've got some blogs up about our favorite women in music podcasters. We're on Instagram at Muses Podcast, on TikTok at Muses Pod. We have a Patreon, patreon.com/musespodcast. You can find us all there.
That's great. Yeah. Yeah, so I was going to mention for this show, the socials are Facebook, the page. It's just facebook.com/almostfamousminute. But then the group that I love, you know, be able to talk, you know, some of our listeners and so forth. Hopefully everyone out there listening right now could join up on our group called the Band-Aids Listeners Society. So that fits right in with you two. And, you know, of course, there's Twitter and Instagram, too, and both at Almost Famous Men. So, and the one last thing I'd want to mention definitely is Pantheon Podcast that we've already mentioned a little bit these past couple minutes. I want to make sure people know at pantheonpodcast.com is the place where you can go and hear a ton of music related shows, podcasts there, including this one and my other one, Feels Like Weezer. So I think that'll be it for today. This was
that's great 91. Because yeah. I'm tired, and you know, yeah, and you know that I'm retired.
Wonderful. Oh, thank you so much. You're doing that wonderfully. Thanks so much. We should be back next week with Minute 92. And until then, it's all happening.
It's all happening.
I am a golden god!
Yeah! Yes, yeah! And I was born in the backseat of a Greyhound bus, rolling down Highway 41.
You know the Queen of Hearts is always your best bet.
Progressive presents Adjusting to the Suburbs. You used to associate crickets with silence. But since you bought a house in the suburbs, you know crickets hate silence. If any other creature realized rubbing its legs together made a piercing, high-pitched noise, they might think, maybe I won't do that. Constantly. All night long. Luckily, you can save with Progressive by bundling your home and auto. Now that's something to make noise about. Just not constantly. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company. Coverage provided in service by affiliates and third-party insurers.